Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, hopefully for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Catherine Albrecht, who's written books on spy ships. We have her book on spy ships. We have a four-tape set on spy ships, going to the background of the RFID identification that is increasingly being used to tag our farm animals, that is increasingly being used in shipments, and of course what they hope one day is to be able to have the RFID identification markers on every single item that is being bought or sold anywhere in the world. And ultimately, of course, I'm sure they would love to chip every human being so that you will neither buy nor sell, lest, of course, you have your number right there. What are the implications of this? Is this the prophesied mark of the beast? We don't know. But certainly there's an awful lot to make us believe that this is exactly what's going on today. And so without further ado, Dr. Catherine Albrecht has her PhD from Harvard. She wrote her doctoral thesis on the RFID identification, and she's on the front lines of this battle. Hi, Catherine. How are you today?
Well, hey there, Dr. Stan. I'm doing well. I think like so many of your listeners, I'm stunned at how quickly things are progressing on every front.
They certainly are. Well, isn't it wonderful to have a voice, you know? Certainly now you have a voice, what, 2 hours a day on Genesis Radio?
I do. I'm on from 3 to 5 Central Time, Monday through Friday. And it's a great opportunity to not feel alone, because I think what you and I realize, because we hear from so many people, is that we really are, I think we're fast becoming one of the biggest minority communities in the country, those of us who are waking up to the realities of what's going on around us and working for liberty and trying to take our country back. There are literally millions of us. And I so often talk to people who feel alone, and I say, boy, if you could only sit in my shoes for just a week and see how much email of support comes pouring in, how many people are rolling up their sleeves and volunteering, how many activists you and I get to talk to, you know, every month. We bring literally dozens of people onto our programs, and so I think we really have our pulse on the fact that this liberty movement is vibrant and growing at just an exponential rate.
Well, I think the thing is that the majority of the American people are good people, and most of them are God-fearing people. They may have some mixed ideas. We may have different interpretations of Christianity. There's many, many sects of Christianity, but the basic fundamental belief is in the divinity of Jesus Christ, his death, his resurrection, and that is, of course, what binds us together, although they're doing everything they can to divide us. But most people in this country, even if they're not Christians, love this country and want to preserve it. So we are the vast majority. If we can just get these people to understand and first to go from wanting to preserve our freedom to doing something active to preserve it. And certainly, I think what your work is so vitally important in exposing this effort to identify everybody as part of this overall view, a plan, so that they can actually track and monitor every American citizen.
Well, and you know, one of the things that I think people need to understand is it's, you know how sometimes you fall down these research rabbit holes? Well, I fell down what I guess I'd call a research snake hole or a snake pit last night as I was following the tribunal in Cambodia. This is the genocide tribunal of the horrible atrocities that were committed in the 1970s under the Pol Pot Khmer Rouge regime, and what was absolutely mind-blowing to me as I began researching just what had happened in Cambodia was how we continue to fall for the same old lines. Not only in Cambodia, but of course you can look at the Soviet Union, you can look at Nazi Germany, you can look at Burma, you can look at any oppressive and repressive regime with a tyrant at its
Hold
head.
That thought, hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Kathleen Elbrecht, who's written the book on spy chips and does research extensively on this effort to monitor people and items and animals and everything they want one day to have an RFID chip in it. In fact, increasingly we hear stories about, you know, that they're actually setting up stores now where you don't even have to have any money. You just walk in and pick up what you want and leave, and it's all monitored electronically. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but we've certainly seen advertisements put out by IBM suggesting that that is the wave of the future. But Dr. Albrecht was just talking about how she's been monitoring what's going on over in Cambodia as they bring to trial the people responsible for the genocide that took place there in the 1970s, immediately after America pulled out of Vietnam, and how we time and time again fall for the same old lies. You pick up the story there.
Yeah, well, it's almost you know, that old, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all of the time. It sure seems like you can fool a vast majority of them with some time-worn strategies that oppressive and evil leaders have been using since all the way back in the Roman era. You can actually read Machiavelli, The Discourses, which is one of the most brilliant and insightful treatises and analyses of how governments get away with this kind of stuff, written by Machiavelli. Everybody always associates him with the prince and kind of writes him off as some evil evil advisor. But I actually really have gotten so much out of reading Machiavelli's Discourses, because what he really was a very keen and astute political observer. And he wrote very brilliantly about these things in the 1500s, the very same things that were happening all through the 20th century in these other oppressive regimes. And essentially, if you've got a cabal of people who want to take power, there are some very simple things that they can do and have always managed to find a way to do. And what they do is they will single out some enemy out there. It may be a legitimate enemy. It may actually be somebody who truly does hate them. It may be somebody who actually even poses some degree of a threat to them. And then they will whip up a hysteria around it. So they'll say, well, there's enemy X out there, and we've all got to do everything we can to fight enemy X, because if we don't, then enemy X will come in and destroy us and destroy our way of life. Now, they were doing this all the way back in, you know, 200 and 300 B.C. even. So this is a very old strategy. Now, once you have the people worked into a complete hysteria and you jump out from behind, you know, every rock and every corner and shout boo at them to make sure they stay really scared, then you say, you need to give us the ability to monitor all of your behavior. You need
hold
to
that thought.
Your weapons.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And, of course, Dr. Albrecht was talking about Machiavelli's treatises on how you control the population. In writing in the 1500s, Machiavelli was really describing so much of what's going on today. He was a political commentator, and basically he commented that one of the things that you want to do if you want to rule the people is you create an enemy, real or imagined, doesn't matter. Probably it's better if he is a real enemy, but you can always create an imaginary enemy like they did in Wag the Dog. You remember that wonderful story with Dustin Hoffman, but
absolutely.
She's pointing out that once you get you point to that enemy, the enemy wants to come here and take away our freedom. That's why we've got to expand our control and monitor everything here to protect you from that wicked enemy that wants to take away freedom. That's why you've all got to carry identification cards to make sure Osama bin Laden doesn't sneak in here. That's why we've got, of course, have our video cameras on every corner. That's why we've got to have everything tagged. That's why we've got to begin collecting dossiers on all the citizens to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden, who wants to take away our freedom. So you pick up the story there.
Well, yeah, and the thing people, I think, don't realize, and it's either because we're not taught history or just human beings have a difficult time assimilating the lessons of history, but as far back as you can look, you will find that this strategy, this tactic of identifying an enemy and then frightening people is extremely effective. Now, unfortunately, what tends to happen is that when you give up your liberty, of course, as Ben Franklin said, to get security, you wind up with neither one of them. You wind up just with less liberty. It's pretty much all that happens to you. And unfortunately, once a population and a people's relationship with their government begins deteriorating into this spiral, what happens is then the government says, well, we need to disarm you. We need to monitor the media. We need to make sure that everything that's published is not in any way affecting state security. And we need to make sure that you have proper permission in order to travel. You're going to need permission in order to do. And the list of things that you need permission for becomes extremely long. And then you get into a situation where now that there's nothing to fear, the government no longer has anything to fear from the people, then the government removes its face. Any political theorist who's understood the value of liberty has been very clear about that. You want the government to fear the people, because the definition of government is people who have sought power over others and managed to achieve it. By definition, that's what a government official is, someone who wanted power and found a way to get it. And those are the people who seek power, who probably should least be given it. So it is really our responsibility to keep those people in check, because by definition they're power mongers, and by definition they will take as much power to themselves as you will give them. So there's always been, in democratic societies, there's always been a tension between the people and the people who are being governed and those who seek power over them, who seek to govern them. When the people who are being governed give up all of their rights and all of their responsibilities to these overlords, then you wind up in a situation where they begin revealing their true selves. And so as last night I was reading the testimony from the tribunal in Cambodia over these horrific atrocities in which 2 million people were starved to death or brutally murdered, tortured in torture centers around the country. Absolutely horrific history in Cambodia. And 2 million people killed in less than a 5-year span of time between 1975 and 1979. So as far as history goes, some argue that it is the world's most bloody regime ever in terms of the number. This is in a population of less than 10 million. So 2 million out of less than 10 million killed. Now, the reason that's significant is because, once again, the government of Cambodia said, you need to give us all of the power and we will keep you safe from, and again, there's a boogeyman out there, but once they take the power from you, then you realize that your true enemy is not that boogeyman out there. Your true enemy is these people who have now revealed their vicious and evil intent against their own people. And you see this happening all around the world. You see it happening all throughout history. And it just stuns me that the American people are following down that very same path, being lured by that very same hysteria, the same fear-mongering. And the fact that we continue to fall for it generation after generation, century after century, is one of, to my mind, one of the biggest mysteries of human society ever. And I spent a lot of time pondering it.
Well, I think it's because nobody really points out what's going on. They could never get away with this if the people really heard the truth. We see this in America today. The threat of guns. Oh, my goodness. Somebody went in and shot 19 people, and they shot 3 or 4 people, or half a dozen people, or shot a minister. Well, the solution is to disarm all the people so that, you know, the law-abiding citizens can't have weapons to protect themselves, either from the criminal element or from the criminal element in government. And nobody ever points out that if they would allow somebody on, a high school campus to carry a weapon, the principal, some of the counselors, why, then you couldn't go in and simply have an open shooting gallery. The people who went in there would realize they might end up getting shot before they did any harm, and they would think twice about that. In areas where you have the right to carry permits, you do not have anywhere near as many violent crimes as you do in other areas. So,
can I do a thought experiment
with
your
listeners
on that? All right. I want you to imagine that you are a depraved and bloodthirsty criminal, and you have no problem breaking into someone's home and taking whatever they own, taking their lives if need be. You're just a person with no morals and no conscience whatsoever. All right. Now, I can pick you up and place you anywhere on the globe with your criminal mentality. Let's say that I put you into Switzerland, where every able-bodied adult male is issued a gun and is required to be able to use that gun, to be trained in firearms usage, and to keep it in good working order, and to keep it in their home. Or I could pick you up and drop you into the heart of London, where it is illegal to own a gun, and in fact, where recently, just a couple years ago, a man who shot and killed a repeat intruder in his own home was actually sentenced to jail time for his quote-unquote crime. Now, where would you rather be if you are a bloodthirsty criminal looking to break into a home?
Well, I think that I'd probably far rather be in London than I would be in Switzerland when I knew I might possibly get shot if I was a bloodthirsty individual. And it's only human nature. It is also logical, but the media never tells us that. In fact, they just love to have the reporter with a grim face there on television telling us about this tremendous gun crime, and they've got a picture of the gun up there in the corner to implant in our mind the danger of guns. It's the depraved criminal that committed the crime, not the gun, because sometimes they even stab people. There was a fellow the other day who had two guns and he had knives. He was actually stabbing people with the knives.
Well, and you know what's been happening in Britain now that they've taken the guns away? Well, of course, the criminals still always find a way to get guns, but they've actually had a problem with sword crimes. People actually taking swords and going into churches and running people through with literal swords. So, you know, Britain has even talked about banning kitchen knives of a certain length. So, you know, that and once you get to that, then what else are you going to do? You're going to have to banish nail clippers and screwdrivers and chainsaws.
A belt, you know, because you can use a belt to strangle somebody. Well, it's become so absurd. I mean, first of all, of course, when you take God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our school, should be surprised when we end up with a lawless society. But the point I think that you're really trying to make is how they try to create the enemy. The enemy, of course, is the gun. That's why we have to take the guns away. But in the process, we disarm the people so that the government officials who are intent upon bringing in a tyrannical regime have nothing to fear. That's
right.
What it's really about.
Well, and one thing, and I've discussed this on your program before, but I think it bears repeating, is that government was six times more deadly a force against its own people in the 20th century. More people died at the hands of their own government than died in all of the century's wars combined. Not just more, but six times more people died at the hands of their government than died from the combined effects of war. So, you know, you look at that and you say, my gosh, government truly is, aside from natural causes and disease, government is the most deadly force on planet Earth, just looking at the statistics and just looking at the numbers. And so we have people out marching in the streets to protest war, but how many people are out marching in the streets to protest excessive government power, which has been shown repeatedly, decade after decade, century after century, to be the most deadly enemy that human beings face on planet Earth?
And you know, the interesting thing is that people don't create wars. I mean, certainly we get along fine with the Japanese. We get along fine with the Germans. And yet, you know, we fought a terrible bloody war against the Japanese in the Second World War and two bloody wars against the Germans in the First and Second World War. But it wasn't the people who wanted the wars. It was the government that wanted the wars and created the wars and prolonged the wars, and of course always we're trying to create this hatred. You know, it's the Germans, the Huns that are responsible, terrible people. It's the Japs. They weren't human beings, they were Japs. And we see this right today with the effort to turn us against the Muslim people. 60 Minutes last Sunday had a wonderful program about the atrocities in the prison, the torture of an Iranian, because he had made some remarks the government didn't like. And I'm sure this sort of thing does go on. It goes on in Iran, it goes on in Saudi Arabia, but we never talk about it in Saudi Arabia. In fact, I can give you instances of people being beaten to death in our prisons, but not a word of it in the controlled media. But now they focus our attention. The Iranians are the enemy. Oh my goodness. We may have to do something about those Iranians. Why, they want to have nuclear weapons just like we do. What a terrible thing. Well, anyway, we're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Catherine Albrecht. And people have, of course, forgotten. How did the Iranian mullahs, these radicals, come to power? Why, the American CIA toppled the Shah of Iran, the Whip put in power in 1953. And how did the Shah get in power? Why, we toppled Mossadegh, who'd be the democratically elected premier or president of Iran. Maybe if we weren't, of course, interfering in other countries so much, why, there wouldn't be as many problems as there are in the world today. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Catherine Albrecht and talking about, well, whatever Catherine wants to talk about. You go right ahead, Catherine.
Well, you know, just before the break, you were discussing how the Shah in Iran was actually deposed as a result of decision, or actually placed in power because of U.S. Intervention, very, very much hated, and that gave rise to the Iranian Revolution. You can go back and trace this in many, many cases. Let me tell you and your listeners something that I discovered last night in absolute, abject, jaw-dropping horror. I mean, I turned white when I read this statistic. Now, this has to do with Cambodia. As we were discussing at the beginning of the program, 2 million people were killed by the Khmer Rouge in a very short, extremely bloody communist regime that reigned in that country between 1975 and 1979. Now, I know about that because I have probably 400 books on topics related to genocide and government abuse of power and all sorts of things. So I thought that I knew everything there was to know about the genocide in Cambodia. Well, boy, did I ever have an eye-opening experience last night. I'm going to read you something. And this is from the UK Guardian. All this information now is coming to light because we're re-examining the situation in Cambodia, trying to understand how it could have happened. Listen to this. The genocide in Cambodia did not begin on April 17, 1975, year zero. It began more than 5 years earlier when American bombers, now brace yourselves for what I'm about to say, killed an estimated 600,000 Cambodians. American bombers. Phosphorus and cluster bombs, napalm and dump bombs that left vast craters were dropped on a neutral country of peasant people living in straw huts. In 1 6-month period in 1973, more tons of American bombs were dropped on Cambodia than were dropped on Japan during the entire Second World War. The equivalent of 5 Hiroshimas dropped on the tiny jungle nation of Cambodia. The regime of Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger did this secretly and illegally. Unclassified CIA files leave little doubt that the bombing was the catalyst for Pol Pot's fanatics, who prior to the U.S.-led inferno had only minority support. Now a stricken people rallied to them, and in this film they're referring to, a torturer refers to the bombing. This is the CIA-based, U.S.-backed bombing that killed 600,000 Cambodians as his reason for joining the Khmer Rouge. What Nixon and Kissinger began, Pol Pot completed. And having been driven out by the Vietnamese, who came from the wrong side of the Cold War, the Khmer Rouge were restored in Thailand after that by the Reagan administration, assisted by the Thatcher government, who invented a coalition to provide cover for America's continuing war against Vietnam. Is that mind-blowing? 600,000. So we look at the at what Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge did in killing 2 million Cambodians, and we say, well, that's appalling. That's genocide. Who, even me, who has studied genocides for the last 10 years of my life, I did not know that my own government had killed 600,000 Cambodians, a third, fully a third of what Pol Pot had killed.
Well, I think the tragedy is that this was kept secret from the American people with the full support of the controlled media here in the United States, that this information was known. It was known in other countries, but it was not known here in the United States because of the degree of control that existed over the American press at that time, and of course similar control today. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Albrecht was just talking about the genocide in Cambodia, but of course she pointed out it really didn't begin when the Khmer Rouge took over. It really began 5 years before when American bombers dumped bombs, almost five times as many tonnage of bombs on Cambodia, and killed about 600,000 Cambodians 5 years beforehand. And it was because of this hatred of America that the people rallied behind the Khmer Rouge. It doesn't really make sense unless you understand that you're not getting the truth. And very often our government will do things to actually encourage antagonism to America. We saw this certainly with the treatment of the prisoners in the Abu Ghraib prison, and many of the people who actually became terrorists we're recruited in our own prisons. And that's certainly, there is no better way to turn people against America and recruit them into the radical form of Islam than to mistreat prisoners of war. In fact, many of them were innocent people. But this is the thing the American people are never allowed to know. And I probably not one in a million Americans have ever heard of the fact that 600,000 Cambodians died in the American bombing, kept secret from the American people all during the war and even after the war, and most people even today don't know what that's about, but because I remember reading not that figure, 600,000, but it was the American bombing that drove people into the arms of our enemies, of the Khmer Rouge, the enemies of civilization. But how do you justify bombing innocent civilians and killing them by the hundreds of thousands? In a country, and then denying to the American people that it took place. And Henry Kissinger was the major architect of that. And ladies and gentlemen, it was just in February of this year when General James Jones, who was in charge of the National Security Council, gave a speech to the Security Council in Munich and congratulated them for their praise of Henry Kissinger and said, well, you know, we have a chain of command in the National Security Council today. I get my orders every day from Henry Kissinger, through the chain of command, Red Scowcroft and one of the other people had been working for Bill Clinton. Henry Kissinger is still in charge. This has nothing to do with Republicans or Democrats. It has to do with the cabal that really runs our society and has been running it for such a long time, and one of the major architects of the tragedy of Cambodia and the tragedy that is unfolding today is Henry Kissinger.
Well, and that's absolutely, I mean, when I look at this figure, see, the War Crimes Tribunal, it's a genocide tribunal that's taking place in Cambodia now to try to bring these leaders, some of whom are still living in the lap of luxury there in Cambodia, in mansions, some of whom still participate in government, these former Khmer Rouge leaders who were responsible for the death of 2 million of their countrymen and women and children and babies and elderly people, and it was just a wide swath of destruction. Those people now are being brought to justice, and they're being forced to answer for their crimes. And some of them at this point are, up there testifying, and you know, people who are horrible criminals responsible for killing 5,000-10,000 people apiece. And I look at that and I say, now, why is it that those people are now appearing before a tribunal and presumably about to be sentenced to many, many years in prison? And why is it that someone like Henry Kissinger is able to not only go free after just this one, who knows who else he was responsible for killing, but after being responsible for killing 600,000 innocent, unarmed peasants in a neutral country? How is it that these other people in Cambodia are now getting the international glare of the spotlight? Everybody's shunning them. Everybody is saying how terrible that they were involved in a genocide, and yet no one even raises a whimper of a protest against Henry Kissinger, who was personally responsible, along with Richard Nixon, for the death of close to, well over 500,000 people.
Well, of course, basically the North Vietnamese were ready to end the war in 1968, and Henry Kissinger wouldn't let them end the war in 1968, kept it going for another 5 years. And, of course, how many more American boys and North and South Vietnamese died because of Henry Kissinger? And yet, of course, this man is one of the major architects of American foreign domestic policy and has been going back to the days of Richard Nixon. I believe that, of course, it's one day these people are going to have to stand before the bar of justice here or elsewhere. I will tell you that there are many countries in this world today who look upon Henry Kissinger as a war criminal. But you know the most amazing thing, Catherine? It's never mentioned by our media today.
Well, that tells you something right there. It really does. And, you know, I feel like we're almost in a third world regime because that same situation came up in Cambodia. Their government was controlled by these people, and their media wouldn't discuss it. Now, you expect that from a third world dictatorship. You know, you expect that from some kind of, you know, third world tyrannical hellhole. But I think, our media is all too quick to point to other countries and say, look how terribly they're behaving. And they never once turn that magnifying glass back on themselves to realize that.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Ah,
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Catherine Albrecht. We're talking about the genocide in Cambodia. And, of course, there's the transcript. Where did you get the transcript, Catherine? It's certainly you didn't get it from the New York Times.
This information actually came out of the UK Guardian, of all places. I was quite surprised because, of course, as we know, the Guardian is, or UK at least, is one of the most clamped down on countries there is in the world, at least in terms of the sorts of things that I study, you know, microchips and ID cards and surveillance. This particular article, and I'd like people to actually read it because it relates to a movie that came out on the Khmer Rouge, and there's a filmmaker and a writer named John Pilger, P-I-L-G-E-R. This came out in The Guardian. It's called A Journey Through Genocide. The subtitle, S-21, The Khmer Rouge Killing Machine, that's the name of the movie, forces Pol Pot's former torturers to confront their victims. The result is remarkable, writes John Pilger. And it's at the bottom of his article, when he gets to the very end, that he discusses the fact that few of us, and indeed I certainly didn't, realize that the genocide in Cambodia did not begin in 1975. It began 5 years earlier when the United States cluster bombed, napalm bombed, dropped phosphorus bombs, dropped dump bombs, and essentially decimated huge swaths of the Cambodian countryside and killed well over 500,000 people. So that's the information. I was just, like I said last night, I kind of fell down this, it wouldn't be a rabbit hole, it would be a pit of snakes on the whole Cambodian genocide. And when I read these words, I said, oh my goodness, now all of a sudden the bigger picture comes clear to me. And to be honest with you, as an American, I felt actually sick to my stomach. I thought, how much collective guilt, how much collective blood is on this nation through no fault of our own? You know, we individual people would never, ever have done this. And in fact, there's a book called Death by Government, which has guided a lot of my research and a lot of my philosophy on this topic. Death by Government is by a professor at the University of Hawaii. I've spoken about him before. His name is R.J. Rummel, R-U-M-M-E-L. And he's devoted his entire academic career to researching this phenomenon of governments that kill people. And he says something very, very interesting in one of the introductory chapters of the book. He says that democracies hardly ever, in fact, I think he may have even said never, go to war with one another.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a minute as we bring our stations back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and we're going to be going on into a discussion of certainly of what happened in Cambodia, talking about a book by Professor Rummel called Death by Government. But before we do, Catherine, I want you to go ahead and get your website out and let people know how they can get in touch with your ministry.
Absolutely. You can find my radio show and all of my efforts, much of my privacy work, my research, and other efforts are linked from the website at CatherineAlbrecht.com. That's my name, Catherine with a K, K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. My last name is Albrecht, A-L-B like boy, R-E-C-H-T. And if you go to CatherineAlbrecht.com and click on radio, you can find all the information of where you can listen to my show live. I know a lot of people aren't in a position to listen to the show in the middle of the day from 3 to 5 Central Time. So if they'd like to, every day at the end of the day, we take the full 2-hour program and we put it up on our website at CatherineAlbrecht.com as a radio archive file. It's an MP3 file. People are welcome to download those, put them on their own website, edit them, trade them, attach them as email, and send them to their friends. It's completely open to the public, and I encourage people to help us get the word out about the show. I also have 2 other websites related to my research into RFID, that's radio frequency identification microchips, and I've been called the thorn in the side of the RFID industry more than once. I am definitely the person who has dogged them since their inception back in 2001, 2002, when they first started introducing this into consumer products. And you can find that information at spychips.com. Of course, I'm the co-author of the best-selling RFID book, Spy Chips, which has has won awards and is entertaining, I like to think. It's got Elvis Presley and talking plants and whipped cream and all kinds of fun stuff, but it's also the kind of book that after you read it, you'll know everything there is to know about RFID. And I also have spent several years of my life researching the microchip implants. This would be the VeriChip and Digital Angel microchips. And we have a website on that, both relating to animals and relating to human microchip implants. And that is online at antichips.com, where you can find an 80-plus question FAQ on microchips, everything you ever wanted to know about implantable chips. You can also find our groundbreaking study, where we did a meta study on the link between microchip implants and cancer. We found that between 1 and 10% of laboratory animals injected with these microchip implants developed cancer around the chips. So again, KatherineAlbrecht.com, SpyChips.com, and AntiChips.com would be our three websites. And the other thing I'd like to ask is if people would like to support our work, we are entirely volunteer. I do not receive a salary for the work that I do, and we are entirely supported by donations and gifts from people who are interested in supporting this work.
And I think this is really a wonderful, wonderful work, a very important work. And Catherine's been called to do this, just as I've been called. And not only does the research, but she also does 2 hours of talk radio a day, which is, I'm sure, requires a great deal of time and effort to get that prepared. Well, we were just talking about this horrible thing that happened in Cambodia, where 600,000 Cambodians were killed by American bombers. Of course, you're never going to hear about that any more than you're going to hear about the fact that the Japanese, at the end of the Second World War, had been trying to surrender for 6 months. We actually have the article. We'll be glad to send it to any of our listeners. The Japanese had been trying to surrender for 6 months before we dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki and killed 125,000, 150,000 in each town. We wouldn't let the Japanese get... I got the article from the Chicago Tribune. They were kind enough to send it to me. We'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. We could talk about so many of these things. People, men and women, become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And this sort of thing, I mean, there are things that have gone on. You can check them out on the Internet, fortunately. Most people have never heard of the Great Hunger in China. I mean, I've been studying this for years. It was only a few years ago. I heard of the Great Hunger where the Chinese starved to death between 30 and 44 million Chinese between 58 and 62, and not a word in the American media. It's like it never heard, never happened. Why? Why? Because we were going to become good buddies with the Chinese communist leaders. We were going to build their cities for them, their plants, their manufacturing, and we couldn't have them, any Americans feeling, that they were really ruthless and evil people who were willing to kill between 30 and 44 million. 44 is probably closer to the real figure of their own people. How could you keep that secret from the American people? Why, the same way you'd keep the fact that American bombers killed 600,000 Cambodians.
Can I point something out on that?
Go right ahead.
We were not at war with Cambodia. It would be bad enough if we went in and killed 600,000 enemy troops in the course of a war. These were not enemy combatants. These were not people in uniforms carrying guns and aiming them at our soldiers. These were people who were on the ground living their peasant lives in grass huts who had death rained down on them from above by an enemy that they could not even shoot back at or even see. That's what makes this so mortifying, is that it's, you know, we get so upset because, you know, the whole 9/11 thing, you know, the official story there, of course, is you had terrorists come in and kill 3,000 Americans in cold blood. Well, you know, you look at 3,000 Americans versus 600,000 Cambodians, it's the same exact thing. I mean, it really, the notion of going in and taking an airplane and flying it into a building and killing people, how is that any different from flying over a country and dropping bombs on innocent people who have done you no wrong and who aren't even at war with you?
Well, that article you were referring, was that in The Guardian?
Yes.
And that's called A Journey Through Genocide?
It is called, let me pull it up one more time, it is called A Journey Through Genocide. I will send you the link. It is in the UK Guardian, and it's actually, of all things, a film review, which is why I think it got through and got published, because it's a film review. And only at the end of this film review does the author, who is a very accomplished student of genocide himself, John Pilger, who's done all sorts of documentaries exposing these sorts of things. At the very end, he manages to slip in this last paragraph, this shocking information about the CIA and the U.S.'s involvement in bringing the Khmer Rouge about. So it's called A Journey Through Genocide. It's on the Guardian's website, and it was published in January 2004. And I'm sure I was so stunned. I have not done a whole bunch of additional research to find the other information, but I do know John Pilger, and I know that he is absolutely impeccable in his research, and he is extremely well-respected. I mean, he's got a 40-year career of as a journalist and as a documentary filmmaker, so he's extraordinarily well-respected, and believe me, if he says it, there's documentation to back it up.
Well, you know, I've been at this for 47 years now, and, you know, I am still learning things all the time that are just so shocking, and I can understand you would be as shocked by that as I'm constantly shocked by the things we come across. How could these things be kept from the American people? Well, very simply, we have a controlled media. Once people can begin to understand that, I think the thing that drew me into this movement 47 years ago was the realization I'd gone through college, I'd graduated with honors and Phi Beta Kappa Chi, and I thought I was really so smart, and I suddenly realized that my mind had been controlled, my education had been controlled, I'd mitered in history, and so much of the history I read and I'd studied wasn't accurate at all. And the sudden realization that they had been playing games with my mind was what really drew me into this battle. And 47 years, it's just gone by gone by very rapidly. And I'm still finding amazing things all the time, the things that the average American has never heard of.
Well, and the interesting part of this, in past generations, the American people were trained, because of our heritage, which is only 200 years old, of recognizing and distrusting big government. So for generations, grandparents passed this knowledge on to children, to grandchildren. In fact, in Europe, a lot of the Europeans make fun of me when I go over to Europe and I talk to these people in Belgium and in the Netherlands and in England, and they all say, oh, you Americans, actually less so in England, but in these other countries, Germany especially, you Americans, you know, you're so distrustful of government. You're all a bunch of redneck, gun-toting, Bible-toting rednecks, essentially. And they say, you know, if you could just get over this irrational fear of government. Well, that fear of government is really one of the principles that united this country for generations. And it's only been in this last generation that knowledge has not been transmitted to the younger generation. It certainly was transmitted to me as a child. I got it both from my grandparents and from my parents, this just general feeling. It wasn't like detailed, let's talk about Cambodia and genocide, but it was just a general sense that you just don't trust the government. And I'm noticing in young people today, they do not have it. And that is because young people today are being educated by schools, by government schools. And, of course, what government's going to tell you not to trust it? I mean, that's crazy. So they're being educated by government schools, by Madison Avenue, that wants them to focus on bread and circuses and spend money and think about mindless things that involve spending money and being compliant. And they're being educated by video games that train them to not only accept killing, but to want to go out and become killers because they make good soldiers and they're willing to go to war and they're willing to allow their country to go to war. So you have all of these forces, and the one that is missing is adults communicating with children. And I almost can't help but wonder, Dr. Stan, if it's not one of the reasons why almost introduced into American society has been this huge cultural gap that kids just roll their eyes when their parents try to talk to them. And I believe that's inculcated into them by the media and by those government schools, to believe that anyone who isn't on American Idol or who isn't in People magazine is not worth listening to. And so there's really not a receptive audience to even hear these crucial cultural messages that parents and grandparents are supposed to pass on to their children. So I think we've lost something very precious in this country, or that we're on the verge of losing it, and that is this natural American, very, very American distrust of, dislike of, and essentially revulsion for government. And on the flip side of that, or complementary to that, is this absolute insistence on being left the heck alone and given our privacy. And we have not transmitted those cultural values to our children. And unless those of us who are age, 40 and up, unless we stand up and start communicating that to the younger generation, they're not going to get it from anywhere else. I was stunned to speak recently. I tutor. I work with a lot of young people. And I was stunned to talk to a 15-year-old recently who didn't know what the mark of the beast was. He had gone to church every Sunday, but he didn't know what 666 was, never heard the prophecy out of Revelation, had no idea. I was talking to an 8th-grade student just today who had never heard of Pol Pot and had no idea what had happened in Cambodia. So, you know, unless we transmit it, if we think that the schools and the media are going to share this information with young people, then we are absolutely deluding ourselves, and we're going to delude ourselves into the destruction of our entire culture.
I agree with you totally, and that's why I do what I do, hoping that there'll be some young person who'll listen, or perhaps their parent will listen, they'll pass it on. But, you know, Catherine, we have more opportunities today to reach the people than we ever have before. Talk radio, internet, shortwave, satellite, all of these things are vehicles for reaching people and getting the information out. And then people who are informed telling other people. And they've forgotten that adage of Lord Acton, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. In fact, one of the senators, I spent some time with, the United States senator, he had to sort of add a little something onto that. Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. And I think he's absolutely right.
That's a good one. Let me give you R.J. Rummel's take on that. R.J. Rummel, of course, the professor who's the author of Death by Government, which is really the definitive work on this. He actually opens with Lord Acton's quote, and then he modifies it, and he says, based on his decades of research, that power kills, and absolute power kills absolutely. And when you look at the numbers, he's got a chart in this book, and the book has chapters on every one of these genocides and on every step of the way of the people relinquishing their power to these tyrannical governments and how the tyrannical government repaid them by slaughtering them in the millions. And, you know, you look at these numbers and you say, my gosh, and here we are afraid. I mean, I'll tell you, a serial killer scares me less than that. An entire army of serial killers scares me less than one genocidal dictator at the top of the food chain who can hire an army of genocidal killers and serial killers and set them loose among us by the thousands, by the hundreds of thousands, and round us up and deliver us up to the genocidal serial killers. You know, it's so funny because we're all afraid of that crazed lunatic. But you got to realize that if you're living in a country where the crazed lunatic is at the top of the food chain, you're at risk every breath you take, every moment. You know, one of the stunning things as I was reading about these torture prisons in Cambodia is that many of the victims of these prisons were the prison guards themselves. If you were caught as a prison guard in one of these horrible, nightmarish places, if you leaned against a wall, they would take you and put you in a cell and torture you, and then you would be a victim if you were one of the guards. So the guards lived in absolute terror. Everybody in the regime lived in terror. Nobody was happy. Nobody won in this whole nightmarish thing. And, you know, they did it all because they wanted to be, quote-unquote, safer. They wanted to have safety from these CIA, U.S.-led bombing attacks. And the Khmer Rouge came in and said, we'll fight back against that. We'll offer you safety against the Americans killing you. And, you know, the reality, you give up security to get safety, and you wind up with genocide. It's crazy. And why people have not seen this message is beyond me. But, you know, again, when I'm talking to 8th grade students, well-educated 8th grade students who get A's and they've never heard of Pol Pot and couldn't tell me where Cambodia was on a map, I say, we're doing something wrong, folks.
Well, I don't know if you ever watched Jay Leno. I hate to even recommend him, but I forget, some of his jokes are so vile, but he does something called, you know, jaywalking, and he talks to these young people and puts them in on his program, and he'll have three of these young students, you know, college graduates, you know, straight A's, assuming they've done very well and they're in college, and he'll ask them the most elementary of questions, you know. Who was the president at the time of the Second World War, United States president? They have no idea. They have no idea, really. They show them pictures of Napoleon Bonaparte. They have no idea who Napoleon Bonaparte was. They don't understand history. We have systematically dumbed down our young people, and that's what's so frightening, because those who cannot remember the past are certainly condemned to repeat it. And the great tragedy is they're not educating our young people today to understand the value of liberty, or the fact that liberty and limited government are synonymous, and that tyranny and total government are synonymous. And we're certainly not moving towards a limited government here in America. We're moving towards a government.
Well, I'll tell you, we're going right down that road that so many other countries have gone down, and that's what chills me, and that's what motivates me to stay working on this. And, you know, as far as passing on the message, I want to let your listeners know, and I have not yet publicly announced this even on my own radio show, but I'll let you know. Speaking of educating the next generation, I am currently working on a book titled I Will Not Take the Mark, that is designed for children between the ages of 4 and 7, or maybe 4 and 8, that is about educating young people about the mark of the beast, about biblical prophecy, helping them in a non-frightening way with lots of beautiful illustrations to understand that there is some biblical prophecy, and to understand that when and if that time comes in their lifetime, that they need to say no. And
I was
inspired to do this because of this 15-year-old who'd gone to church every Sunday, and when I said Mark the Beast, he goes, "What's that?" I said, "Boy." Now, for me, I was 8 years old when my grandmother took me aside in a farmhouse kitchen in the Midwest and told me this. And it stuck with me my whole life and actually motivated me to become an activist when I was in my 30s and began to realize that this prophecy was beginning to become a potential reality. So I don't know, had she not taken me aside and taken the time to talk to me at age 8 and tell me this information, and she died the following year. So, you know, it was one of our crucial and important conversations, and she took the time to do that. Had it not been for that, I may not even know about this biblical prophecy, and my whole life would have probably taken a very different turn. So we've got to spread the information to young people. The book that I'm working on, I've got a brilliant and beautiful illustrator. She's making breathtaking illustrations for the book. As soon as she is done, it's going to go to the publisher, and we hope to have it back and available to the public by Christmas time, so parents and grandparents can get this book and get copies for their grandkids, and at least give them something that they can hold on to and know, you know, what the truth is. And the thing I'm most excited about the book is at the very end there's a certificate where there's actually a pledge that the child will take saying, "I promise to only worship the one true God, to never worship the beast or anyone other than God, and I will call on Christ to help me keep this promise, and I'll never take any mark on my right hand or my forehead." And boom, there you go. And the child signs it in their little 5-year-old handwriting. And then there's a place for a witness, which would be grandma or mom or dad or grandpa or whoever reads through the book with them. And there is a frameable certificate that they can actually take out of the book. There's two, actually. One stays in the book and one can come out and be framed on the child's wall so they can remember this promise that they've made to always worship the one true God and never to be deceived by this thing when it comes. And, you know, you and I, Dr. Stan, we both feel it coming. I don't think there's any question.
Well, I certainly, we know, we see all the signs of the times. Everything points to it. This is the return of the children of Israel, you know, the Jews to Israel, certainly the move towards the monitoring of the people, of the move towards world government. Everything is in place. All we can do is watch and warn, and that's our job, your job and mine. As soon as that book's done, please give me a call. Well, of course, we'll be talking to you once a month. Hopefully, you'll keep us abreast of how the book is coming, and we'll do everything we can to help you get that distributed. I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I look forward to our monthly chats every month, and I'm delighted that you've made time to talk to me on the air. Thank you so much.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, of course, our guest was, of course, Dr. Kathryn Albrecht. Of course, he has a PhD from Harvard. Wonderful, wonderful source of information on a monthly basis here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I do hope that you enjoyed our interview with Dr. Kathryn Albrecht. She has her PhD from Harvard University. She certainly is one of the high points of the month as far as I'm concerned. I hope you enjoy her as much as I do. And of course, remember her website, it's buychips.com, and of course the antichips.com, another website. We do carry her book, Spy Chips. We have a 4-tape set on Spy Chips where you'll actually hear some of my interviews with Catherine. And then, of course, we have a great DVD. It's with Pastor Billy Crone. It's called RFID Identification. It's four of his DVDs where he actually takes the video footage or DVD footage put out by the people who manufacture the chips, what this is really all about, and how they are going to mold and control you through the use of the chips, because they're going to know what you buy, what you want. It's all going to be in the dossiers that they will, of course, be able to keep on every person in the United States. That's RFID Identification, four DVDs by Pastor Crone. The book Spy Chips by Catherine Albrecht, and the four CD set on Spy Chips. All available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you would like to get the sets we have on the Final Countdown by Pastor Billy Crone, there's each five DVDs, and each one of them goes down to all of the things that are taking place today that were prophesied. And the video clips in there really make it, of course, much more watchable. Fascinating information that he's gotten together. And of course we have a five CD set, the first of five of the 10 talks on this. It's called Countdown to Armageddon. That's Countdown to Armageddon, and you can get those five CDs. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you want the DVDs, which are great. In fact, you can get the CDs to listen to your car and the DVDs to watch at home. We also have his DVD on, of course, on creation. There are 10 DVDs in the set, and one on Get a Life, the story of how he became a Christian, coming out of the pagan existence, and how God saved him. It's really very, very touching, very well done. And, of course, we have a number of other things that we're offering that Pastor Crone has put out. We want you to have that information to understand the spiritual nature of the battle we're engaged in today. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to get it. If you can't afford it, it's only $12.95, but if you can't afford it, go up on the internet at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can go down on the video, scroll down to Brotherhood of Darkness. You can watch the talk from which the book came. The book's nice because it's got all the references, but all the material is there. The basic theme is in the DVD. And then, of course, we have our talk on the Forbidden Secret with a book, a syllabus that goes with that. Important for you to have this information and help us to get it out across America. We put together a new four CD set on the financial Armageddon with some of our recent best interviews, Bob Chapman, certainly Pat Wood, Gerald Celletti, others, four excellent CDs in the four CD set. Financial Armageddon. You have to understand what's going on, because most people are going to get totally destroyed financially before this is over. So you'll want to get that. Certainly you want to get the book written in 1889 called The Final Battle, telling how the banks at that time were exploiting the people, creating booms and then busts, and of course taking away people's farms and homes, just like they're doing today. And many of those same banks exist today. The owners of the banks are long dead, but the spiritual forces that control them are not. Because behind so many of these people like J.P. Morgan, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, were powerful spiritual forces, the Mellons, the Whitneys. But you're never going to hear that mentioned today. You need to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a financial battlefield. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for America and for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.